All right, good morning. We are continuing our just really, really brief series, just thinking about artificial intelligence and Christians. And I just want to give a brief review of what we talked about last week. We tried to answer in a very broad way, what is artificial intelligence and also why should Christians really care about this subject? We noted that artificial intelligence has been around for a little while. Sam gave a brief overview of the history of it, but he noted that what we have today with what is known as generative AI is different, qualitatively different than what we've had in the past. And he said that it works similar to our brain, but it's not like our brains fully. At best, it can pattern match things. But still, that's a very, very powerful tool. And it allows that to produce many different things. Sam spent most of our time last week just talking about the kinds of things that this generative AI can do. Talked about language models, and that would be things like you see now in your search engines, ChatGPT, Gemini, those kinds of things. I also talked about image and video models, and actually I'll demonstrate a little bit more of that here this morning, and various ways in which that can be used. And then Brother Sam also talked about voice and audio models and speech recognition, transcription, and so on. Lots of different tools that this artificial intelligence brings us. Am I still alive? All right. Okay. So he talked about some of the practical applications of this, and in each of these, Sam noted how some of their applications can be used for wonderful goods, and we also at least teased out a little bit that some of it can be used for bad things as well. Okay, so that's just kind of a broad overview of last week. With this, we've laid the groundwork for understanding what we're talking about when we speak about artificial intelligence, but from here, we need to really back up the train and ask not so much what is artificial intelligence, but what the Bible says about it. But, you're going to do a search in your Bible. Doesn't matter what translation you're going to use, you're not going to find the phrase artificial intelligence, nor are you going to find the abbreviation AI anywhere in the Bible. So how do we begin to actually think about what the Bible might say to a technology or about a technology like artificial intelligence today? Okay, so how do we connect that? I mean, after all, the Bible, I mean, the latest book, Revelation, is probably written somewhere around 90 AD, right? That's on the late end, maybe 95. So we're talking nearly 2,000 years old. You get to the literature of like Job, you know, we're talking 35, 36, 3,700 years old. They just weren't thinking in computing power terms back then. Graphics processor was not a thing for them. NVIDIA, the massive company fueling all the chipsets for all the artificial intelligence, that wasn't a thing. So how do we connect the world of the Bible to what we think about here today with artificial intelligence? Okay. In order to do that, we actually just need to think about the idea of technology. The idea of technology. And technology is not new. Technology is not new. So with that, we're going to talk about a theology of technology. And I asked one of the artificial intelligence platforms to make me a slide for the phrase theology of technology, and asked it to make it for a church presentation, and this is what it came up with. And it did that for me in about a minute. So wonderful. That would take me a long time to come up with that. I thought it was pretty cool. And so powerful tools, right? A theology of technology. Now, typically, as we think about the term technology, when we use the word technology today, most people immediately think about the ideas of computers or the internet or now artificial intelligence and so on. Okay, so if you think about the tech industry, that's what we think about. So when we hear the word technology, our brains usually, our minds usually these days, not always, but usually think towards the computer side of things. We might think about Silicon Valley and all of the tech innovations that have come out of there. However, That isn't actually what we mean when we talk about technology. The word technology originally meant the systematic treatment of something, especially in the realm of the arts and sciences. Okay, that's what the word originally meant. In fact, it's actually from a Greek word, all right, originally. So it goes back like 2,000 years. Okay, technology is a systematic treatment of something. Now, today, when we use the word technology, over time, words change, and technology does have a little bit more of a narrow focus, Merriam-Webster gives two primary definitions to the word. The first is the practical application of knowledge in a particular area. So when we think about that, that would be something like, engineering or medical technology. So it's a specific application of knowledge or application of knowledge to a specific area. Secondarily, and it's very closely related when we use the word technology, it's a capability given by the practical application of knowledge. So it's actually the result of the practical application of knowledge. So in the first part of that definition there, is where a person knows something and applies it to a particular area. So think about a doctor who's doing surgeries and he notices that he has a particular problem and that his stitches are not holding long enough. So he applies his knowledge of stitches and surgery to this particular problem. In time, he may come to the second part of that definition and actually produce a capability that is a better, longer-lasting stitch for his particular kind of surgery. Okay, those are almost two sides of the same coin, but not quite. Okay, he might spend years working in technology trying to figure out a better form of stitches and never actually come to it. But he's engaged in some sort of technological exploration. But maybe one of these days he strikes gold and figures out exactly what the correct formula is for those better stitches. Now, this way of talking about technology appears in the English language primarily during the Industrial Revolution. This way of thinking about technology is this practical application of knowledge to a specific area. That's born out of the Industrial Revolution, which, of course, if you know just a little bit about your history, that's born out of the scientific method and the Enlightenment ideals which foster that. And so it's not totally new, but maybe a little bit more focused in roughly the last 175 years to think about a heightened, intense focus on solving problems through our practical application of knowledge. The scientific revolution and the industrial revolution increased the rapid pace of applying knowledge to a particular area, and it increased the rapid pace of producing capabilities that come from that knowledge. But in reality, these things have actually been done for a long, 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 long time. In other words, I think that if we were to rewind the clock to the era of Job, roughly 1500 to 1800 BC, depending on how you date things, I think Job and his servants underneath him did in fact sometimes stare at a problem and think about all of the practical knowledge they have and say, how could we make this better? That's as old as humanity itself. So when we talk about technology, this is not something new. It may be newly focused. We may have better methods to get there, but the idea itself is not new. You might think about it this way. We do not know who invented the wheel. You can read about histories about that. There are speculations about when it came into being and things of that nature. But at some point, someone or a group of people with some practical knowledge in a particular area figured out how to give this capability that has transformed society, transformed the world. We cannot imagine life without the wheel, but somebody had to figure that out. That was a technological capability that was created, that was invented. Okay, so when we think about a definition, we're talking about the practical application of knowledge in a particular area, or secondarily, it's a capability given by the practical application of knowledge. Now, that leads us to think about technology and its relations. Now, when we think about tech and its relations, technology is related to other ideas for us as human beings. I'm going to focus on two. There are probably more, but I'm going to focus just for time's sake on two. And after looking at these, we'll then spend a little bit of time looking at specific technological developments in the Bible itself. All right. So there's two related ideas to technology. These have to go together. The first is that of human creativity. Human creativity. Technology flows out of human creativity. Human creativity is a subset of what it means to be made in the image of God. I'll say that again. Human creativity is a subset of what it means to be made in the image of God. Remember Genesis 1, 26 through 28? You know, God said, let us make man in our image. Be fruitful, multiply, let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, dominion over the whole earth, subdue it. We, as image bearers of God, we reflect in a small way what God is like. And part of what God is like is a creator, creative God. Okay, so God is a creator, he is creative. We as image bearers of God reflect that in a small way. Now, it is true that you will find a few examples of animals who can manipulate objects in the world to use them for their own ends. I think about Casey and I, our first, it technically wasn't our first pet together, I think. Zoe wasn't our first pet. We had Franklin the fish. Was that? Franklin the fish was eaten by Zoe the cat, but that's a true story, all right? but Zoe the cat was our second pet that we had. Zoe was a really, really smart cat. She loved, for whatever reason, like the hair ties, kind of the thicker hair ties that ladies use. Casey uses them for ponytails and hair and stuff like that. She absolutely loved those. She would play with those, find them, knock them around the floor. For whatever reason, she was a weird cat. She would also pick them up and put them in her water dish and play with them, which made me so angry, especially the one particular day in which she did that. And also the one took them, put them in the toilet, and then walked across myself and all of my tax documents as I was sitting on the couch doing that, all right? That was not a good day for Zoe or me, all right? But she survived. She survived, all right? Zoe's a smart cat, though. She could figure out how to she figured out how to play fetch, which was unique for cats. There are a few cats that can do it. And one of the things she figured out how to do is we had these chairs on the backs of them. There was kind of these studs that stuck up about that far, and she would bring on occasion those hair ties and put them over the back of that and pull them back with her teeth and launch them. All right, and she would go get them. So she learned at times to play fetch by herself, okay? Well, that's pretty cool, all right? We should have really put that on video and put that on YouTube, or, you know, we'd have been some of the early cat video people, all right, out there. Zoe's a very smart cat, but here's the reality. As smart as she was, it's not the same thing what humans do. The level of creativity that Zoe exercised there is just, at best, a flicker of what anything that a human being can do. Zoe couldn't think of in terms of the possibilities and fantasy and things like that that human beings can do. We're qualitatively different. Now, we are also qualitatively different than God. The primary difference between our creation or our creative acts, it's probably a better way of stating that, and God's creation is that God creates things out of nothing. The Latin phrase for that Bible teachers use is ex nihilo, which literally means out of nothing, ex nihilo, right? God creates things out of nothing. We create things with what God has made. And this allows us to make incredible things. Creativity for human beings is not just in the realm of the arts, such as paintings and symphonies, but it's also with hammers and car engines and artificial intelligence. These are all reflective of our ability, God-given ability, to create. We are creative beings. Human creativity, therefore, is an incredible gift to humanity. It is what allows us to have the systematic treatment of something or, as Merriam-Webster defines it, the practical application of knowledge in a particular area and the capability that this process produces. Human creativity allows that to happen. So technology is related to human creativity. Now we make tools and all sorts of things as reflective of the image of God. All right. But also, I'm missing a slide someplace. Let me see if I put it out of order. I don't have my slide. All right. I'll go back and I'll just tell you about it. Here's the second relation. So we're talking about technology and its relations. The second one is to that of work. Work. Technology, in general, is strongly related to our work. In fact, people who have thought through this well more than I have, who are Bible teachers, and would say that it is nearly indistinguishable from our work. The reason we say that is nearly every single technological achievement is tied to our attempt to produce something, and production is related to work. Now, if it is not tied to work, it is tied to human creativity in the realm of the arts. For instance, over time, there have been greater and greater achievements in the kind of paintings that human beings can produce. All right, you go find those early paintings that were, you know, painted on the walls of caves, like they're still in existence. Those were technological achievements. Somebody had to figure out, just by means of creativity, how to have some sort of paint, and I use that term loosely, to apply to the cave wall to produce that form of art. They could not do the Sistine Chapel in 3000 BC. They simply did not have the type of technological achievements. That comes later over time. So on occasion, technological advancements are purely out of the joy of human creativity in the realm of the arts. But almost always, technological achievements are related to our work. They're tied to our work. And you may not like this if you need to go to work tomorrow morning, but work in the Bible is a good thing. Work in the Bible is a good thing. In fact, a few years ago, I was listening to someone talk about the Christians and their work, and they said that with your kids, that you should never say to them, "I have to go to work." All right? You should say to them, "I get to go to work. I have worked on that quite a bit. I don't always succeed." Even in that little bit, it's reflecting something that actually work is a God-given joy. You may not think of it that way always. In a fallen world, sometimes it isn't as joyous as we would like it to be, but we're made to work. In fact, this also relates to the idea of the image of God. God is not only a creative God, God is a God who worked. In 6 days, the Lord made heaven and earth. The seventh day, he rested. He set a pattern by his own actions that we are to follow. Adam himself was charged to tend and keep the Garden of Eden. That would have involved manipulation of what God had created. We are made as image bearers of God to work. And when Adam was charged to tend and keep the Garden of Eden, that would involve a manipulation of what God had created. And I think it's really likely that over time, Adam would have developed tools and may have the very first day that he was in the garden to tend and keep the garden. I mean, you might think about it this way, all right? Would Adam have been sinning as someone made in the image of God as he looked at the garden and thought, you know, I'd like to move that plant over here? He'd have the absolute right to do that. Remember what God said to him? Be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, subdue it, have dominion over it. He had the right to move things around. Would he have been sinning if he figured out that, you know, digging with my hands to move that plant is hard, but what if I got this big stick and dug this out? As soon as he did that, that was a technological advancement. Right? He would have done those things right away. Technology is not actually against God's original created order. It's the natural outgrowth of it. So we work, and our technology is designed in many times to help us advance our work. That is related to our human creativity, it's related to our work, and it's related to technology. They all go together. So notice that both human creativity and work are responses to God. As image bearers of God, we create, and as image bearers of God, we work. Technology is an extension of human creativity and work. And there are then some important implications to that, which we'll get to shortly. All right. Now let's think about tech in the Bible. Some tech in the Bible. All right. We can't survey all the places where in the Bible technological developments are demonstrated, but I do want to just point out a few early ones. The Bible's first mention of technological development occurs in the wicked line of Cain in Genesis 4, 17 through 21. In fact, I should read that for you because it is interesting the kinds of things that are developed. So you got a Bible, you can go there, turn to Genesis 4 as you're right at the beginning of your Bible. Genesis 4, verse 17, we see a number of technological developments. It says, and Cain knew his wife, and she conceived and bore Enoch, and he built a city. That's new. All right? Our city's evil. Don't just answer that as country snobs, all right? Our city's evil. If you say, yes, they're evil, heaven is going to be terrible for you, because the centerpiece of heaven is New Jerusalem, which is a massive city. All right? Cities may not be your favorite things, but they're not evil. He builds a city. And he called the name of the city after his name of his son Enoch. Verse 18, to Enoch was born Irad. Irad begot Mahulel, and so on. You got all these long names, all right? Verse 19, then Lamech took for himself two wives. The name of the one was Adah, and the name of the second was Zilhah. And if you know the story of Lamech, Lamech's not a good guy. Cain was not a good guy. And then we read some of Lamech's children. And what they do, Adah bore Jabal, or Jabal. He was the father of those who dwell in tents and have livestock. That's a technological achievement. Is it sinning for people to have tents and to gather herds and livestock together? No. But who's the guy who created it? Is he a good guy? Did he come from good people? No, actually, you read through Genesis 4, the entirety of Cain's line is pictured as not good. And yet, they produce some of these amazing technologies. Also, his brother's name was Jubal, or Jubal. He was the father, verse 21, of all those who play the harp and flute. Harps, flutes, evil, not evil? Sort of. I hear somebody say it. Are you a clarinet player?
Yes.
Yeah, there it is, right there. That's why, all right? Yeah, Lisa's the flutist over here, all right? No. Or the pipe is literally the idea. It's not evil. And then for Zilhah, verse 22, she also bore Tubal-Cain, an instructor of every craftsman in bronze and iron. So these people produced amazing technological achievements, things that we actually still use today. Now, it may look different than what they have, but that's where they came from. So technological developments are in the Bible. Moses seems to be pointing out here that even though that people sin, the image of God stamped upon them stills allows sinners to create and produce good things. We may not think about so much the second technological development that is mentioned in the Bible, but that's the ark. That's an amazing engineering feat. Whatever it looked like, whether it looks like the one that Answers in Genesis put up in Kentucky or not, probably close to that, or whether it looks like that or not, that's an amazing technological achievement. And in this case, was it an evil person who created that? No. In fact, God gave the dimensions and the design for it. A third example would be the Tower of Babel. Now, we don't like the Tower of Babel, but those people figured out how to build tall buildings. And we're thankful for that. Those are really helpful and useful tools. All right. Each of these are serious technological achievements. Some were created by good people for good purposes, and some for not so good purposes. In the case of the Ark, it's God who gave the dimensions, of course. Those of the Tower of Babel were clearly rejecting God. But no doubt the construction techniques of shipbuilding and edifices were carried on by both believers in God and unbelievers alike. So technology is in the Bible, and we can keep tracing it all the way through. You're going to find dozens and dozens of examples in the scriptures. Now, what does this mean for us as we think about that as it relates to artificial intelligence? Let me give some practical implications from the Bible, all right? Number one, like all technology, AI, artificial intelligence, is a result of human creativity, and it is related to our work. Okay, so this new technology is not different in that it's somebody was thinking about how could we make things better for our work and human creativity. Some blending of the two. Second implication, every technology, including AI, can demonstrate human creativity and can increase our abilities as humans to work. And artificial intelligence is already doing that. In fact, I think, Brother Sam, you mentioned last week that it can code in a far superior way than you ever could.
Speed-wise,
thank you. Yeah. Yes, there are limitations to that. It can't innovate in the way that Sam can, but it can do basic stuff at a very, very high level. Number three, every technology, including artificial intelligence, can be used for good and for evil. Every single technology. A hammer can drive nails and can also be used as a murder weapon. Every single technology. In a fallen world, it can be used for good and for evil. And what's interesting is when the technology is first comes about, it may not immediately be apparent what good it's for or what evil it can be used for. For instance, the development of the wheel may have saved the backs of laborers, but it also may have introduced the transportation of people in a way that its original inventors did not foresee. For evil purposes. Evil things aren't immediately apparent. For instance, the inventors of the wheel may not have foreseen how the wheel could be used for war machines. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. So every technology can be used for good and evil, and when it's first created, we don't even fully know yet what good it can produce and what evil it can produce. Time will tell you that. Fourth practical implication, while technology, including artificial intelligence, can take away certain human practices, it may also allow, and key on that word may, it may also allow greater expressions of human creativity and productivity, i.e. work. For instance, we can think of it this way. Go back to Genesis 4 and ask the question, which is more human, to whistle or play the flute?
Whistle.
What?
Whistle.
Why do you say whistle?
Because you just know how to do it. It's just an automatic thing.
Okay, it's just with you. All right, somebody said play the flute. Why?
You have to create the flute and then play it.
Okay, so then you're doing something human in the creative process and then learning to play it. See, it's really hard to tell, isn't it, right? Because both have certain elements. Go back to that illustration of Adam in the garden. Is it more human to dig out the dirt with your hands or to forge a shovel and to dig it out? I mean, both are there. So every technology, yes, it sometimes takes away what appears to be human capabilities, but it also may actually increase human capability and creativity. That's true with artificial intelligence as well. And furthermore, with every technology, there is the potential to take away human agency and creativity, but there's also the possibility to expand them. Usually, time and wisdom help to sort these things out. And for that, we're turning the wisdom to Brother Sam. He's going to come tell us about the pros and cons of artificial intelligence, at least with the brief amount of time I left you. Sorry.
All right. Good morning. We will try to get through this quickly. All right, so last week we looked at a broad number of ways in which AI can be used, and we tried to keep it pretty neutral. It was just about what can it do, how is it being used. This week I'd like to look very briefly at pros and cons in two specific ways, two unique ways. Way number one is, how is just the outcome of using the AI tool good or bad, positive or negative, value-producing or corrupting? And then on the second slide, we'll look at how is the process of simply using the AI tool good or bad, positive or negative for the individual? So the first one is just going to be, what's the outcome? And the second slide is going to be, what about for the person using it? How does this tool affect the person using it? So first one here, the actual outcome. Pros, we know we've touched on all of this stuff, so we'll just go over it pretty quickly, but enhanced productivity, innovation, and efficiency. This is just going to speed everything up. It eliminates repetitive tasks. Everything's going to happen faster. This is the way of technology. Every technology that we see, almost without exception, increases the rate of something, the rate of production, the rate of work. And so that's no exception here. Improved quality and safety. It can do near instantaneous error checking and risk analysis in ways that either we're still prone to human error or we're just much slower. Increased accessibility and personalization. Dramatic quality of life improvements for people with disabilities, reduction in language barriers, easier solutions for special needs, where before it would have had to be customized and pretty expensive. So if you didn't have the money, you weren't going to get the solution. Now there's going to be tools where if you've got someone with special needs, you're going to be able to create things essentially for free that are dramatic improvements for them. Proliferation of misinformation and fraud on the cons side. Erosion of authenticity. As I said, fakeness will abound. Fakeness does abound. Everything's going to seem AI-generated and increasingly generic. Are humans making anything? So this is the idea that if everybody's using these same AI tools to generate stuff, everything kind of converges on the same kind of homogeneous outcome. And so there's probably going to be a little bit of a pendulum effect where everybody's really excited about creating stuff, and then suddenly all the creation starts to look the same because nobody's actually creating anything. And then there's going to be a new value to the idea of, like, hey, did you actually make this or did AI make this? So that's one of those things where as this technology increases, we're going to kind of figure out what that means. What does that actually look like? Erosion of academic and professional integrity, lack of accountability. Right now, in a lot of ways, AI is the easy button. It's tempting, and it's legally and ethically fuzzy. We've already seen countless headlines and instances in both academia and law and medicine where people maybe aren't using these tools appropriately, and that's going to continue, and there's going to, again, be some type of equilibrium point out in the future where systems are devised to try to orchestrate what it means to use tools like this in professions with specific boundaries and requirements. And then the final one there is super obvious: malicious use, security risks, application of bias. Because of what these tools allow people with nefarious purposes to do so quickly, many assumptions about how we live safely in society will be fundamentally challenged. You can't do voice authentication for bank stuff anymore. That's just not possible, because I can copy your voice listening to you in a McDonald's, and I could do voice authentication. So that's like, that has gone away. Like, that doesn't exist anymore. It's too dangerous. And even things like facial recognition are going to become potentially challenging. So we don't know exactly what the extent of that is, but all of those things are going to be coming into light, causing problems, and we're going to have to figure out how to solve those problems. So there's a quick overview on just the pure outcome. Let's talk about, what about for the person? So on the pros side, reduced cognitive load, enhanced focus, improved organization. It can just eliminate things that aren't critical, that aren't crucial, especially in a work setting. It can just eliminate things that you just end up doing over and over again, and they aren't really value adds. It can eliminate tasks that are interruptions to what you're really trying to do. And you can actually produce higher quality work from being better organized. So those are all good things. Skill augmentation and development, interactive learning. Everyone now has access to a learning turbocharger for the low, low price of probably mostly free. We'll see exactly how AI value proposition turns out in the future. Right now, you can generally use it for free. But the reality is that you can learn things in a way that has never been possible before. It's essentially like a free college tutor, PhD level professor at your fingertips. And so if you want to learn, if you've got that creative drive, it's never been easier to get high quality learning. Creative catalyst, risk-free exploration, confidence building. It can make it easier to start projects by giving you kind of creative starting points. You can try out ideas for free in some ways, or low cost, and you can kind of test your skills and knowledge without risking much. And so in that sense, it can be beneficial for learning and producing. Cons, and this is what Ward immediately was kind of pointing towards last week. So what happens when we're letting this thing do all kinds of stuff for us? So this idea of decline in critical thinking and key skills, cognitive dependence. Many of our abilities are muscles. If we stop using them, they atrophy. So what happens if we're letting it kind of do things for us and we stop having to do them ourselves? We also readily build dependencies. GPS is a really good example. Like, we went from having to use maps, even if it was a printed out map, to just kind of like listening to some ephemeral voice from our dashboard tell us where to go. And now people struggle like driving places without that. So that type of thing can happen in a lot of different areas for humans. Intellectual complacency, constrained originality. If we don't have to strive to find answers, it can make us less curious, less creative, and less likely to push the boundaries of knowledge. So that's a risk. Diminished sense of ownership, reduced patience and perseverance. So in a similar vein as the previous, effortless answers kind of alienates us from our own work, and it erodes crucial character qualities. It can, depending on how we use it. So all of these cons aren't necessarily guarantees, but they are potential implications of using AI tools in maybe not great ways. Finally, social skill decline, unconscious bias absorption. Right now, at the very least, AI personality is too agreeable and congratulatory. It's super happy with whatever you say. It's really impressed if you ask it any question. It doesn't represent the full breadth of human experience when we actually interact with real people. And so it would be easy to spend all your time talking to AI, feeling all kinds of warm fuzzies, even whenever you're getting answers wrong, and it's just kind of coaxing you along towards the right answer, and then being unwilling and incapable of working with real humans who interact in real ways whenever you make mistakes, say things that are incorrect, or they just disagree with you. And then finally, AI models have bias. We talked about that a little bit last week, just based on how they're trained, and potentially even they can be pushed a little bit more by whoever owns and administers that AI model. And so if you aren't thinking about or challenging the answers coming out of the AI tool that you're using, you could just kind of absorb that bias without really thinking about it. Okay, time check. Q&A?
A couple minutes.
Yeah, my very last, I'm gonna go to number two here, because it's the most cogent. Do the benefits of AI tools outweigh the potential downsides? First point is that they're already integrated. Like, we're not getting away from AI. That's not really an option. So number two is, as we're presented with more and more opportunities to use AI-based tools at our discretion, wisdom is required for how and when we choose to use them. As Christians, we are blessed to have God's Word and the Holy Spirit, as well as the ability to engage with our pastors and fellow believers when we are conflicted or presented with situations we aren't fully certain how to deal with. So the end of the day, there's not a right or wrong with AI. It requires wisdom, like everything. And so we, as Christians, have ways of acquiring more wisdom and working with others with wisdom. So Yeah. Real quick questions. We're just about out of time. Yes.
Okay, say I get on YouTube and it flashes all these shorts for my daily search.
Yeah.
How do I know which ones are AI generated?
All of them. No, I'm just kidding. That's a good question. Some of them you'll be able to tell because there'll just be things about them that are just a little off, a little non-human. I suspect as we move forward, that video output is going to become less and less discernible. And so that's a good question. Right now, sometimes if you see something that just seems outrageous, like I saw, you know, some AI generated content that was like, Russia invades Alaska. It's like, no, they didn't. We can check that in multiple ways. Russia has not invaded Alaska. So in some ways, you just have to do a little more research. In other ways, it could be really challenging. Yeah. Yes.
What are some exercises, I guess, you could say to train people to utilize AI correctly? Like, for me, maybe it wouldn't be a good idea for everybody, but I find whenever I try doing something in coding, because I'm not really all that great at coding, but when I try and work with an AI model in coding, there's instant feedback whether or not it actually worked or not. The thing breaks. There's a bug, and I can work through that. And so it kind of helps ground you with some of the limitations of AI and working with AI and the fact that you actually have to do the investment. So what are some of them?
Here's a real quick way to think about using AI. When we drive, we need to have a driver's license, we need to be in the driver's seat, and we need to know where we're going. When you're using AI, if you don't know anything about what you're doing, and you're just letting it drive you around, and you don't know where you're going, you're probably going to get into trouble and use it in unhelpful ways. So this is like with kids. If you just let a kid loose on AI, that's kind of like letting somebody who's never driven a car, has no driver's license, and doesn't know where they're going. Not good. Probably not a good idea. So even as adults, when we're trying to use AI, if it's just kind of dragging us around and we have no idea what we're doing, we're accepting whatever it's saying without any context, we're probably not in a good position. So that's a big question that would require a very long answer. So I know that's a little bit detached from your question, but that's a way to think about how to use AI tools.
Yeah, like a practical, just personal illustration of this. I just finished a class where I read a bunch of very difficult books that very few people in the world have actually read. Okay, so there was nobody in our church. Most of my fellow pastors that I know haven't read those books. I got a professor. I can only bug him so much. And so I could go and read the book and go, am I understanding what Martin Heidegger says about this? And ask ChatGPT, when Martin Heidegger uses this phrase, does he mean this? Yes or no, David. That's a good guess. But what he really means is, right? So that kind of tool was useful because I already had a base set of knowledge that was being used to help check that. So if it wasn't like that, I would just be, you know, to use your metaphor, it's a good one, driving blind and just assuming that whatever it said was true. And that would have been very, very dangerous.
Todd.
Could this be kind of an electronic version of the Tower of Babel? In one sense, if you look at the things that actually demise humanity in the end, that is actually a conglomeration of all of human capability under the guise of one individual. I just wonder sometimes, not saying that it isn't a useful tool, I'm not saying that it isn't capable in a lot of ways, but it's a culmination of technology. It basically can move across all barriers of language and move across all barriers of distance. And a significant tool that culminates in humanity being able to exalt itself against God in a very focused way and in a controllable way from the powers that be that hold its reins. I'm not, again, just like all of the technologies are very useful and beneficial in many, many ways, but this is the first time I think we see something that has such extreme capability of the human fingertip, my personal fingertips, that literally can be controlled by someone and also moved across the bounds of all other realms and done that fast.
Yeah. I would say, like all technologies, one of these days, when when God allows the beast to reign on this earth, he'll use whatever's there. The thing is, though, I look historically and I'm reminded that people said the same thing about the internet. They said the same thing about the atomic bomb. We can go backwards in history and you can find that people were saying, oh, this is the thing that is finally making humanity rise up against God. My theology, and I think Sam and I would probably share this in agreement, I don't want to speak for you, but I think both of us would say is that humans have a way of taking every good thing and wrecking it. And artificial intelligence is no different. But they also, even as fallen image bearers, have amazing ways of using good things out of it. So I just think that both will be true. You know, in the Lord's timing, if we're in the last days, we're in the last days, we're always in the last days. But if we're in the last days, sure, it could be used for that. But I remember as a kid, people freaking out about barcodes, saying they were going to print them on the back of your hand and put them on your forehead, and that's how you were going to get into places. So in other words, I think that humanity, people always worry about this technology being the next thing. I'm not so convinced of that. So it could be. Could be.
We take that last question real quick.
So I do IT work too, and I had to research AI risk. And not being a programmer, it's, you know, a little bit of it was fuzzy for me. But the one thing I took away from the risk with AI is they're all based on models. And whoever builds the model, that's the engine in the back, puts parameters on there and defines the outputs. You really have to have a lot of trust in whoever's managing and manipulating that model. So for things, technologies and stuff like that, maybe writing advice and stuff, you might be able to trust it a lot more. How to code, if you ask the model things about existence and God and stuff like that, that bias is going to come through big time. So am I right in that kind of being the major?
100%. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, we have a Bible and we have pastors and we have fellow believers for a reason. If we're leaning on AI for our ethical, moral, and theological questions, we're going to run into the same problems as if we asked some hyper-liberal professor those questions. So,
yeah, good. We're out of time. So I hope this has been at least thought-provoking. Lord bless you. We'll get ready for our morning service.